WSBTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello again, Notre Dame fans. You're listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. I'm Mike Sullivan, and joining me is Mike Brammer and Ed Sullivan. And we're going to spend about 15 minutes talking about some Notre Dame basketball and some new additions to the Notre Dame football staff. But first, let's turn our attention to basketball. Last week, Notre Dame got handled easily by Villanova. That game was in Philadelphia, and a combination of a hostile crowd and a very athletic Villanova team saw the Irish give up over 100 points for the first time in over 10 years. So does this resurrect some of the ghosts of the doubts of this basketball team for you guys, or is this just an aberration like the Georgetown game?
Well, I think the Georgetown game and the Villanova game show the weaknesses in Notre Dame. If they're not, they go up against a very fast, athletic team, they could have some problems defending. They put up 87 points themselves, they were behind from the get-go, and just really never made a run.
Got it to within seven a couple times late in the game, and quite honestly, there were a couple, I thought, bad, either no calls or bad calls that could have got Notre Dame back in the game. Falls had a three rim out that could have got the game to four, but you never had that feeling that we were really in the game.
No, I didn't think so. I mean, we played right into Villanova's hands, too. I think Jay Wright came out with a great game plan, which is, all right, fellas, we're going to turn it up a notch and see if you can play with us, and they did it the whole entire game. Now, we fell into that trap because we tried to match them on three-pointers, and we did for a while. I mean, we hit an enormous amount of three-pointers that game, which is kind of a bad sign. You hit that many three-pointers, you still lose by giving up 100 points. It was unfortunate. It was going back to what we did last year, which was come down and fire from three and just try and outscore people.
I think that's the bad habit this team can fall into, is sort of just relying on that.
Yeah, but they haven't been doing it this year.
No, we haven't. I agree.
And all of a sudden we did.
The real concerns are, I mean, Villanova and Georgetown and those two losses, they pretty much got any shot they wanted whenever they wanted it. And for all the talk about this team's commitment to defense and, pressuring the ball and getting the stop when you need it, against really athletic teams, we're going to struggle to do that.
Yeah, Villanova found themselves in that game. They went on to beat Texas this past weekend and looked good doing it, and sort of found that intensity that took them so far last year. And I think Notre Dame's vulnerable to a team like that. When you look at our big win against Alabama, which I saw more of than the Maryland win, Alabama did not play, except for one brief period of the game, Alabama did not play with that intensity. And that athleticism plus that intensity is going to be very hard for Notre Dame to step up and match.
Well, I disagree with you about Alabama. I thought Alabama played really well in a tough environment and played hard the whole game. But that's the difference between being at home and on the road. I mean, the home court advantage, if there is such a thing at the Joyce Center, it's hard to tell sometimes, but that makes a difference in energy level, your ability to match the opponent's energy. And on the road, it's Villanova had their backs to the wall. They had to win that game. They played like it. It's tough to win on the road. I think everybody knows that, particularly in a conference like the Big East.
It's tough to micro-analyze every single game because you have to look at it in the course of the season.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, going into that game, you had to look at it as if, all right, we got our backs against the wall for us to walk into Villanova in a must-win situation for them and come out with a victory. Certainly, I would have loved to have seen it, but I wasn't anticipating that. And we bounced right back and beat South Florida, which is what we needed to do. So, I mean, take care of home and, steal one or two on the road. We're all right.
That's huge for the Big East. And from that standpoint, neither the Villanova game or the Georgetown game really caused me all that concern for the overall, get into the dance.
It's just kind of way
again next week.
That is a problem for me. Those are games you look at the schedule and say, we're probably not going to get that one. But it was the way that we lost, which makes you feel like this team's a little more vulnerable than their record would indicate.
It's kind of funny. At Georgetown, we hold Georgetown to 66 points, but only score 48.
But that's their style of play.
At Villanova, we score 87, but let them score 102.
Georgetown's style of play is a little more deliberate. You know, that Princeton offense that they run. Villanova is a more up-tempo offense.
Yeah.
They've never seen a shot they don't
Villanova,
like.
They didn't shoot the three that well all year long, and all of a sudden they break out on us and shoot better than 50%.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get a chance to see him again. We got. I mean, we're on the road at St. John's tomorrow, and then Villanova comes in here on Saturday, and then we go at Syracuse, at South Florida, at DePaul.
Well, let's talk about the South Florida game here for a minute from Sunday. It was a good bounce-back win, and, you know, Notre Dame won handily. And in the late in the first half, defense really keyed the whole turnaround in the game. Notre Dame went on about a 15-0 run with defense creating the offensive opportunities, which that's nice to see. And that momentum continued through the second half. But one of the storylines from that game is Russell Carter. For the second game in a row, or second home game in a row, it appeared that Russell Carter is pouting a little bit. Anybody concerned about his attitude?
Yeah, there's something going on there. Now, it could very well be that, you know, he's one of the top three leaders in scoring in the Big East and probably feels like he's got to produce that night in and night out, and all of a sudden he's not getting as many touches. You know,
no.
He takes a couple bad
shots. Well, Carter took 13 shots. He had more shots than anybody on the team. He's getting his touches.
But in his own mind, he's not. I mean, there's a reason he's out there. He's clearly pouting. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is two games in a row where people have visibly seen it, and it's been obvious. So something is clearly going on, and, I mean, what else is there to pout about?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I think people are D'ing up on him in a way that maybe they weren't early in the season. He's not going to surprise anybody. He's putting up numbers, and so he's drawing the best defender, and people are maybe adjusting to stopping a little bit. Now he's got to get tough and deal with that.
Yeah, or look for the open guy. I mean, look for the spot up three. If they're going to give us that, and if they're going to fall off the falls and look to help out on him, he's got to recognize that. And earlier in the season, he was doing that. All of a sudden now,
guys, there's no trend here with Carter. The South Florida game was the first game he didn't score in double figures. He lit up Villanova. He had 24 points. There's no trend with his production or his scoring. It's his attitude. Even when he's playing well, his attitude seems to be a little off.
Something strange. Yeah. I mean, in the last two home games is where I've noticed it. I really haven't noticed it before then.
Well, coming up for Notre Dame, obviously, you're going to need a healthy Russell Carter physically, emotionally, spiritually. Russell Carter's a huge part of this team. And a must-have game, I think, for Notre Dame is St. John's. And here's why it's a must-win. St. John's doesn't have a great record. They just beat Syracuse, good win for them. But Notre Dame needs to have a road win in the conference. And, you know, it's a tough conference to win on the road. And so you look at a St. John's team that's a little down, and you think, boy, that's one of those games you can get on the road, because at Syracuse is going to be tough, at DePaul is going to be tough, and at Rutgers, as bad as Rutgers is, I think we all know that winning at the rack is never easy. So this St. John's game is a must win.
And they beat DePaul at home as well. St. John's beat DePaul at home. At home they've played pretty decently, beating Syracuse and DePaul.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It's just one of those games where you say, if we're going to get a road game, this is one of them we have to get.
Yeah.
Okay, let's flip over to football. Charlie Weiss had a press conference on Friday to introduce new defensive coordinator Corwin Brown and Ron Paulus as the new quarterback's coach. And I think one of the things that stands out with Corwin Brown is that, you know, he's from Chicago. He's got a great network and base out of Chicago, and that's got to help on the recruiting trail.
And I mean, certainly, I would say that I'm after hearing the press conference, I felt a whole lot better about his decision to take Corwin Brown than anything. I mean, I thought it was kind of good of Charlie. I don't know that he necessarily needed to do that, but it was kind of nice to hear, hey, look, I went and talked to the top guys, Parcells, you know, guys in the pros, and they all pointed to one guy, and it was Corwin Brown.
Yeah, Belichick named Brown, Parcells, Al Groh, and Romeo Crennel all told Charlie Weiss, hey, this is your guy, Corwin Brown.
That's good to hear.
And it'd be nice if he had something to recruiting, and the paper had some nice things to say about his abilities in that way. I got one job for him. Don't give up 550 or 600 yards in offense.
I know. You know, that's going to be a tall order. The help isn't coming anytime soon defensively, personnel-wise. So this will really be interesting this upcoming season. If he has the same type of effect on a statistically bad unit that Charlie Weiss had in his first year with transforming the offense, that will be remarkable, and that will be an obvious indication that, you know, hey, the problem was not just personnel. But quite honestly, I'm not expecting anything of the sort. This team still is going to have real problems on defense.
There's no reason that we should have given up the kinds of yardage we did, even with the difficulties in personnel. That's beyond the pale.
Yeah, the good news for him is it can't get any worse. I mean, right. He's going to step into a situation.
Careful what
where
you say.
Let's hope. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, at least he's got some areas to improve upon that'll be noticeable if he does anything. So, I mean,
well, you know, I'm going to throw this out there to you. The defense in 06 was statistically better than the defense in 05. You could argue that there was some improvement there. You know, obviously not acceptable. Defense has been a liability. My point is it's going to continue to be a liability. It's not going to get any better. I don't care who's running the show. Now, like I said, if we see a miraculous transformation, obviously all that goes out the window. But I just don't think it's realistic to expect that the defense is going to be the kind of defense, Ed, that you're looking for to complement a ball possession offense. That
no,
defense
not
is
next year. I understand that that's not going to happen next year. But I'm just saying that, you know, do we think that Mississippi, for example, to name an SEC team, does Mississippi have better personnel at defense than Notre Dame?
You know, yeah, I think they do.
You think Mississippi has, if you go back and look at who they recruited, they have better talent.
Well, that you hit it right on the head.
Ole Miss has better talent than Notre Dame.
I can't comment specifically on Ole Miss, but you hit it right on the head. And you look at who they recruited. And this is the problem. Next year's senior class has seven guys remaining, and two of them have any kind of significant playing time. Maurice Crum is the only one on the defensive side of the ball from next year's senior recruiting class. There's seven of them left. The junior class, you know, there were 16 or so guys, and not one of them is a standout defensively. That was the class that Weiss had to patch together.
Yeah.
Okay? This is your two senior classes, junior-senior classes. None of those guys are, you know, were recruited, major recruits for anybody on the defensive side of the ball, and that's half your team.
None of those guys were major recruits for anybody? What does that mean?
None of those defensive guys in the junior and senior class were considered to be major recruits for anybody that we are competing with.
They couldn't have gone to USC or Michigan or Florida or Ohio State. Could they have
keep going down the list, Ed.
They've gone to Ole Miss.
Ed,
LSU gained 300 yards against them.
All right,
almost 600 against us.
Listen, if you want to play that game, we held, you know, Michigan, we held SC to below their statistical average when they played us. Okay, so if you want to play that, you can't compare game to game. You cannot compare game to game and say, well, here's what they did against LSU, here's what we did against LSU.
You could go through our game against Ohio State, our game against USC, our game against LSU, game against Michigan, and not one game, but if you compare groups of games, there were teams that had less talent than us that did statistically better on defense than we did. So
I don't know how you make that claim of less talent than us. I don't know how you make that claim.
Why did Charlie make a change? Tell me.
Because the results weren't there, okay? The results weren't there. But I think, my theory is, it has as much to do with inability to land the difference makers in recruiting. And I think this is where a guy like Corlin Brown with direct NFL experience, playing experience, coaching experience, a guy that is a dynamic person, is going to be able to change that perception and change the recruiting. From a X and O standpoint on the field, I'm not sure that there's anything anybody could have drawn up or done differently with this group of people. But we have not, 2 years in a row, closed the deal on a stud defensive recruit.
Yeah, but got to believe that recruiting is 25% of the equation. You can't
bring a
defensive coordinator because you think he's going to be able to recruit better.
Why? You cannot make chicken salad out of chicken you know what, okay?
Well, here's the problem. Look, I mean,
that's
no matter
not
how
necessarily
you slice,
true.
Yeah, no matter how you slice it, when we go to man-to-man coverage, we give up the big play more times than other teams in Division I football. I mean, it's just
flat. And why is that, Mike?
Talent. I agree.
But
you got to think that there's a way as a coach to say, all right, I got to counter this.
Don't play man-to-man. And so then we get fried for sitting back in a zone. Right, we got to blitz more. Okay, if you blitz more, you got to play a little more man. Yeah, and then we get beat. So we don't get enough pressure, so we got to blitz more. I mean, it's a double-edged sword.
Greg Schiano put together a pretty good defense at Rutgers.
I would have liked to play his schedule, too.
Well, now, I'm not talking about where his team should have been ranked. They beat Louisville, who was a good team, okay? That was a good football. Rutgers was a good football team. I don't think they should have been considered for the national title, but they were a good football team. They stopped people sometimes. They didn't let 600 yards of offense wreck up. And he did not play with a bunch of top recruits. He took guys and made them better, and the next year made them a little better, and suddenly people started to notice them, so then he got better guys. Okay, so all I'm saying is you can't just sit there and say, hey, we don't have the guys. That's why we give up 600 yards. Baloney.
Well, Ed, we didn't average 600 yards. Oh, I mean, in fact,
we got embarrassed for the last three bowl games and other regular season games because we can't make a stop. We look silly defensively. Something's wrong there.
I agree.
It's not just talent.
That's the biggest part of the equation is the talent. There is no talent on this football team defensively. Zbikowski is overrated. And Duke Way is a quarterback or wide receiver. Ambrose Wooden was a quarterback. Go on and on down the list of guys that were playing. There are no linebackers on this team.
That's why we don't challenge for the national championship.
No, that's why we give up.
That's different. That's why I part with you. That's why we're not challenging for the top five, for the top ten, for the national championship, okay? But if you have a defensive coordinator who says, Coach, you bring me a top ten recruit, I'll give you a top ten defense. You give me a top five recruit, I'll give you a top five defense. Oh, you give me a 20th or 25th ranked recruit, I'll give you a 25th ranked defense. Baloney. Goodbye.
Okay. Let's talk about the recruiting rankings here for a minute. Let's talk about the recruiting rankings. The junior and senior class combined, if you took them as one class combined, would rank near 50th, not even in the top 50 of the country, if they were combined as one class. They're two separate classes. The recruiting has been so mismanaged, was so bad, that you have half your football team made up of three-star guys who are not contributing, who cannot compete. And so when we go against the elites, we get embarrassed and look silly. You're right. We didn't look silly and get embarrassed against Georgia Tech or UCLA.
No,
in those games, the defense actually won those games. And you know who looked silly and got embarrassed? Was the offense against some of those teams. The offense did. So it is a matter of having the players.
What are you saying? You think Charlie should have kept him? You think it's not Minter's fault?
No, I'm not saying.
Go on the record, yes or no. Should Minter have been changed for the defensive performance? Or are you speculating that the only reason to change Minter was recruiting? On the record right now, give me your view.
Oh, okay, counselor. can I call my lawyer here? Because you've been fired as my lawyer, let me tell you that.
Yeah,
okay,
because you didn't recruit good
enough?
Listen,
I have no problem with making the change of firing Minter if Charlie feels that that's what needs to happen. If there was communication issues between the two of them, personality issues, there's probably a lot of factors.
He's not the easiest guy to coach for.
There's a lot of factors that probably go into that, which all affect the performance on the field. But the single biggest factor affecting the performance on the field is the lack of talent and personnel on this football team. Not only in numbers, but in quality. There are no linebackers on this team.
Then in that case, then Charlie is pointing fingers around people instead of taking responsibility himself. He's firing a defensive coordinator because he didn't have enough talent, and it's the head man's job to bring the talent.
And he's doing that. I offer to you this.
Then why fire Minter?
There might be other reasons besides simply, well, let's look at the performance and the statistics and make my decision based on that. Maybe it's their communication style between the two of them was bad.
Yeah, maybe.
Personally, they didn't get along. Maybe he can't recruit. There's probably a variety of things, okay? Let me finish. I offer to you Peter Voss as an example because you can't point to anything performance-wise, why Voss got fired. But it had to do with other things going on in the program that we don't know about. So my point simply is, Corum Brown, he may be great, but you're not going to see any real difference this year because there isn't any talent on the defensive side of the ball. Okay, we got to wrap it up there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame football from the perspective of at least one fan who knows what he's talking about and one who doesn't.
Notice how but he always gets the last word.
Yeah, I always get the last word. Okay, yeah. Anyway, we'll be back again next week. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to Mike, I always forget this, info@domeanddomer.com. Until then, remember, I'm Dome, but they're Domer.